Now, Cathy will conclude this three-part series on the election results right here on Behind the Scenes.
Thank you for joining me with Behind the Scenes with Cathy Lambert. Tonight, we're going to talk a little bit about what you're going to be reading in the media and some of the things that may or may not be accurate. Again, my job is not to convince you or to change your mind necessarily, but to inform you. Then you get to be the one to decide if you have new ideas or you were surprised by something I say so that you can do more research. So one of the statements that's come out is that our new president has never really put strong women around him. And I heard some debate one day on this topic by his former press secretary, and she listed all of the very intelligent women that had been around him, including herself as an intelligent woman. And also his daughter had a very big role. She's an intelligent woman. His wife is very intelligent. She's got a book coming out, and I heard some excerpts from that I think will be really interesting. And then, of course, now as going into being the 47th president of the United States, he will have the first chief of staff that is a woman. So I think that, again, when people say things, let's just not take them at face value, but just say, well, that doesn't make any sense. The other thing I want to point out is that when the media doesn't like something, they use a lot of adjectives. And so as you're looking through information, look at the number of adjectives that they put into the conversations, because that gives you a pretty good idea of exactly what is going on. I took the Seattle Times one day and I crossed out all the adjectives. And oh, by the way, I do know what an adjective is. And so I crossed them all out and then read the article. And it was very interesting. One of them had over 20 adjectives in it. And they were painting a picture that may or may not have been accurate. If I had not read the first time before I took the adjectives out and just read it the second time, I would have formed a very different picture in my mind. And I thought, wow, this is so subtle that we just accept the adjectives and their discussion of what it is. And for instance, they were talking about on election night, with characteristic modesty, Donald Trump said blah, blah, blah. So characteristic modesty, it's just like, really, it's kind of a backward slam. So look at, and I do some writing for newspapers, and I do know that it's important that you feed people clearly the truth and the facts and let them decide what they think about it. And these little innuendos and backhanded remarks and comparisons are totally irrelevant. And it's so interesting that when you state something about a topic and then somebody responds back with, well, something completely opposite. And it's like, okay, I almost kind of sort of see where you came up with that, but it's to have a retort rather than a conversation. And so I will frequently say to somebody, tell me how that's related, or tell me why that was necessary to this conversation. I'm happy to have that conversation, but to be really clear on how people distort and try to turn away exactly what it is that you're trying to say to them because they don't like it. And I think that that's really an important thing to be aware of if you are even reading the newspapers anymore. So right now, another topic that we're going to have to talk about in much more depth on another time is voting integrity. And I know when you say voter integrity, people want to just put their fingers in their ears and jump up and down and say, I don't want to hear about it. But we have to know, whether you are Republican, Democrat, or independent, you need to know that your ballot was correctly counted and that there were no shenanigans and all of the things were done in a way that there is no question. And, you know, lots of times the elections are far enough away that somebody won by, you know, 50,000 votes. And so if there was one error or one problem, then, you know, it's not a big deal. But if there's a difference of 3 ballots or 22 ballots, many of the elections recently have had very close ties, close. And so you need to be sure that every single ballot was counted correctly and that there was no problems with that. And when they do things like change out the computer at midnight and not call for the required observers to come and watch you change the computer, and that you didn't show them the draw where you have to do a check on the data so that you can be sure that on a given set of data, it's going to give you the right answers. So you have to do an accuracy test before you can use it. Well, when they finally did get there, they said, where's the accuracy test? Oh, well, I don't know. And then they said, well, you know, let's look at the monitors to get some other questions. And of course, surprise, surprise, the county's camera was not working. So those kinds of things, whether they were purely a fluke, coincidental, whatever, they don't help establish people's feeling of confidence. And every single thing that you do with an election needs to help people's confidence in the integrity of the election. So the other thing is, in planning elections, there is a committee and they have very specific, there has to be somebody from the Republican Party, some from the Democrat Party, somebody from all of the ethnicities that are included in the ballot, number of people in the county. And if they reach a certain range of people in that minority group, they have somebody on this commission. And so it's a very good committee. And the problem is that when there in the past have been problems where the committee made a decision and there was a minority opinion, they would not print the minority opinion. And that person that was on the minority opinion called me one time and said, what I have to say is so important, and there's no way I can get this into the report. Nobody knows what I know on this topic. And I said, well, they should have a minority opinion so that in people looking back at it later on can know that that topic was discussed or tabled or whatever, or that somebody had discovered it. Because often in science, there's a footnote in a report that somebody reads and goes, oh my gosh, 10 years later, this was the cure for whatever. So you should have a minority report. And I think that in every one of these reports, there should be a minority report if any of the members of the Election Integrity Committee have a concern. It should be listed and by their name if they choose to, so that if somebody's reading the report, they can say that this particular member was very concerned about this. And if I want to know more, then I can call him and get from him the information. So again, lurking, how are we going to make sure? And another decision we're going to have to make, and especially in King County, because we have two, if not three, members of the county council who believe that non-citizens should be able to vote. Now, they can't or shouldn't be able to at the federal level, but these council members would like to see it at the local level. So if we as a state or a county or federal government believe that people who come here and are not citizens should make decisions and vote, then that is a very serious decision, and it should not just be slipped away. It should be something that is very, very serious, and our Constitution does require at the federal level that you be a citizen to vote. So we need to have that conversation, and I don't know why people should be able to vote on our country's rules if you are not here. It would be like me deciding how my neighbor is going to spend their money when I don't have any input into their, I shouldn't have any input into how they live their lives. That's their lives, and they should spend their money and make their decisions. And it's not up to me as their neighbor. And while you could be a good neighbor, you shouldn't be telling them how to run their lives. So I got this off the internet on the Microsoft internet. And I'm going to just read you two paragraphs of this because I think it's very interesting. It's informative, but it's kind of snide actually in some parts. So I think it's interesting. And so here we go. On election night, with characteristic modesty, Donald Trump claimed an unprecedented and powerful mandate. He certainly won the contest legitimately, if more narrowly than the observers initially thought. His popular vote margin over Kamala Harris has dropped from around 3% on the evening of November 5th, or about two-thirds of Joe Biden's margin in 2020, to 1.55% today. That's about a half percent smaller than Hillary Clinton's national popular vote margin over Trump in 2016. To make some other comparisons, Barack Obama won the popular vote by 3.9% in 2012 and 7.2% in 2008. And George W. Bush won the popular vote by 2.4% in the very close 2004 election. Okay, so this is good data that's very interesting and something I hadn't thought about. But the main issue is two things. One, doesn't really matter. He won. So as long as you got the majority plus one, you won. So it's really superfluous information. And secondly, or it's not necessary, I guess, information. And the other thing is, it's the Electoral College that is the one that finally decides based on the amount of votes in each state. So anyway, he got the Electoral College, and we are on to having that election completed. So I do think it's important that we look at this kind of information and see what was the purpose of saying this? Was it to undermine, well, he didn't really do that well? And, oh, by the way, he has characteristic modesty. That is not how he speaks. And I know that people don't like that he is flamboyant, but that is his personality. And many, many brilliant people have flamboyant personalities. So I think the rhetoric needs to be toned down. And I think the only way that's going to happen is if we call the newspapers or whoever is publishing things and say to them, really, I don't really need this. And next thing that they are talking about is that having voter ID is discriminatory and that it's dangerous and suppresses votes. So I'm done with that one. Once COVID was, and one of my girlfriends couldn't go in to get a hamburger with me at a restaurant because she didn't have her COVID card, and I had to order her a hamburger, and then we ended up eating outside because she couldn't go inside. So if you need a COVID card to be able to get a hamburger, and nobody said anything about that suppressing your right to, oh, by the way, eat. And so I'm not buying this anymore. Most people can get ID, and it's not that expensive to get ID for all of the things it opens up. And now to fly, you're going to even have an enhanced ID. And that, by the way, is a little more expensive. So to say that you would suppress people from having the ability to vote is, in my mind, ridiculous. So you can decide if you think that it suppresses voter ID to say some voting to have a voter ID. I do not think so. And so I think that the important part is that it would stop either the real or perceived election fraud of somebody coming in and saying that I'm Susie Q, if they're not, saving the integrity of our elections so that people aren't questioning, did somebody vote here that shouldn't have, protecting ballots from theft and fraudulent votes, catching people attempting to vote under fake names, double voting in multiple states, or voting as an illegal immigrant, which we just talked about a few minutes ago. So I do door to door as I'm a precinct committee officer, and I cannot tell you how many people have told me that this person died 5 years ago. We continually get ballots from them and for them. And, you know, this person hasn't lived here for many years. This person. So the voter rolls are not as clean as they should be. And there is the Judicial Watch, which has taken on several states because it is required by federal law that you clean your voter rolls, that you make sure that if they've died, you take them off the list. If they've moved, that you take them off the list. So they have found in several states, and someplace in my files, I have the exact list from Judicial Watch on exactly how many people have been removed from voter rolls that were dead or were moved or whatever. They actually didn't exist. And so taking the names off, if they haven't voted in a very varying periods of time, 4 years in some cases and more in other cases, if they haven't voted, then they go on the inactive list. And so they can be reactivated if they come and vote, but at least you get them to come back and vote. So there is also Marsha Blackburn, who is in the legislature federally, and she's leading the charge to enforce the voter ID laws and make it permanent in all 50 states. So I think that that is a good step in what goes on. And I think that it's really important that we vote and we really think about that whether or not we like vote by mail or not. Now, originally, when you say vote by mail, people will go, oh, I love it. And I understand that. But we need to look at the cost differential. We need to look at the potential for fraud that isn't there otherwise and really evaluate it. Yes, I will give you that it is more convenient to get your ballot at home, but it doesn't mean that that's the only consideration. There are other ways. And so here's the situation. Originally, when they were in our county, when they went to vote by mail, they said it would give better turnout. Well, okay. Did that happen? Not really. And before, the election people would say, in this type of election with this many issues, we believe 35% of the people will vote in this election. Or, and this is a presidential election, and we believe 80% of the people are going to vote. Or, this is an off-year election, and the issues aren't that pressing. And so we believe that 40% or 20%, whatever the percentage. And so they print that many ballots and have them ready at the precincts. If the precinct runs out of ballots, then they can call and get more ballots brought in. But then they only have to print that amount. So now they have to print for 100% of the people when they know that, say, 40% are going to vote. So 60% of the ballots are floating around or in the garbage or just wasted. And with all the postage now being paid for by the government because they decided that it was unfair, it was a poll tax, to require people to put a stamp on the envelope, and that would make poor people not be able to vote because the stamp, which was in the 60 cents at that point, was too much. And we also had the option of drop boxes, and my staff was on the committee to allocate where all the drop boxes were going to be. And it was quite the controversy because at first the proposal had them at universities and highly Democrat areas. And so it wasn't convenient for people of various different ideas. So we sat down and my staff sat down and did an excellent job of looking geographically and by which precincts are equally balanced between more heavily Republican, more heavily Democrat, and how many people vote. And, you know, the geography, as I said, to make sure that people didn't have to drive too far and that they were fairly uniformly at places like in front of the city halls where people knew where they were, so that people could drive if they couldn't afford a postage stamp and go and drop them off at the drop boxes. But then people said, well, that's not really good either because they have to pay for the gas and that is an inhibitor. And I'm like, no, 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 no. You have your ballots 2 weeks in advance, and I'm sure you've driven downtown to go do something like go to the grocery store, go see a friend, go for coffee, and you could swing by City Hall without it being too much of an imposition. So I've heard pretty much a ton of reasons why this is too hard. But, you know, there are people in countries in the world that go and vote, and they walk. They spend hours in line. They do so much for the privilege of voting, And we say a stamp's too expensive, and dropping it off at City Hall at the drop box is too much, and having voter ID is too much. No, this is a privilege and a right if you are a citizen. And so you need to show who you are. And it would be so much cheaper to go back to in person, where you go to your own precinct. The precinct workers there know you. If you came in, if I came in with an ID that said Susie McGillicuddy Jones the Third, they would go, "Yeah, I don't think that's your name. Show me ID." Well, they'd show it anyway, but they would know when I walked in, that is not your name. And then it was always posted who had voted and who hadn't. So, you know, I would look and see if I'm the first on the block or the last on the block to vote, and be able to go and remind my neighbors, "Hey, it's time to go and vote," or ask them to walk over across the street with me. So I think that it's really important that we talk about the idea of going back to in-person voting. Now, don't panic. Don't fall on the floor. And really getting the data again and looking at what is the cost differential, and then what is the improvement ratio of people voting, which it is not what they said it was going to be by far. And then also the other argument was, well, we just can't find poll workers. It's just so hard to find poll workers. Well, you know what? Right now we have to find observers for 21 days. You can find observers for 21 days, but you can't find poll workers for one day? That doesn't make any sense. So the equipment to go back and do that, we still own. It's in the storage. And I think that we should have the ability at each precinct, which is what we used to have, where you would sign the book, and so that they knew what your signature looked like. There was none of this, "Oh, your signature doesn't quite look like it did, so we're going to hold your ballot, and then we're going to have somebody later come and verify your signature and catch it all up. And we're just going to do all that." And that's ridiculous. If you come in and you sign the voter box, and then I believe you should show your ID so the signature matches the one on your driver's license. And then when you have finished voting, you run it into the computer that is there. And you can do a number of things, have it show up so you can see that it correctly recorded everything you thought you voted. And if something isn't quite right, you can stop it right there and go, "Whoops, I meant to vote for this, and I realize now that I did it wrong." Or, "This machine did not do what I thought it should be doing," and it could be taken care of right then. So there's no quote, quote, hanging chads. There's no Donald Duck pictures in the margins that create havoc and cost lots of extra money. It goes through the machine or it doesn't go through the machine. And then at the end of the night, they take all the precincts on a disk drive, or it's been fed down into the elections headquarters, and they tally it all up. So you know right away when the precincts close what the scores are from each precinct. They add them up and you get the answer. We should be getting the answer on the night or the following day if there are issues that need to be taken care of. But we have 20 days. Now, the only thing that's different in the 20 days is that if you are a military person overseas, you have more time to get in before the date of certification, which is about 20 days. And that is because militaries overseas can be in places where mail is not frequent and they could be out on patrol or whatever. And so military are allowed to be any time prior to that, which is why, and it's another story for another day, why I was so shocked that in the Dino Rossi race, that military ballots were not counted, in my mind, as they should have been. And that actually went to court. And I don't know exactly what happened in the court. And I have great concerns about that because I'm the one that saw the ballots in the vault and called to have somebody come from the Secretary of State's office to figure out why these ballots had not been counted. So that as I said, went to court. I did not follow the court case. And I have heard many things about that, that someday may come to the fore. But that's the exception, is the military. And I think that we need to really consider this. Now, there are other options, too. We could have people, and again, we're going to have people saying, oh, she just doesn't know how poor everybody in King County is. We had a study done by the Technology for King County on who has access to computers and also smartphones. And the number was so much higher than people thought. So every library has a computer. And many people who are considered poor have friends who have computers. And so the thing is that you can go to Staples and print out something on your cell phone. And the cell phone, smartphone, was way high. I believe it was in the 90s. So people have more access than we thought, especially now. And I believe it will continue to be even more, where eventually almost everybody will have the opportunity to be regularly at a computer. So that being said, what if we had a system where you could download your computer, on your computer, your own ballot, and that's easy by your precinct. Now, every precinct has or could have a different ballot because there are actually over 100 different voting jurisdictions. And so you may be different from your neighbor across the street, that their fire district is different than your fire district. I know one of our subdivisions up on Novelty Hill has 3 fire districts in their subdivision. So yours could be different. But by your address and your various precincts, it calculates what you should be voting for. So you print it out, figure out on your own at home in your fuzzy slippers whom you want to vote for. Now, you can either take that in and run it through the machine at the precinct. And that way, the county doesn't have to pay to send you a ballot, and you can deliver it and sign the book, go directly to the machine, run it through, and you're done. It could be fast. There are no slippages. And I think that it would save a lot of money, a lot of time. You wouldn't need to have people observing as much. Obviously, the issues with ballots that have some kind of problem or some kind of question, or military ballots coming in. But you know, those are so much smaller, and they can have people, fewer observers necessary if that's what's going on. The ballot issue, where if there's some problem with the ballot, then that person copies the ballot for you at the headquarters, the election office. So I do believe that we have got to start really looking at how clean are our voting rolls, and have we really thought of the best way to handle this so that there is almost no fraud. I also think that on presidential years that we need to vote the same day at all across the country. And that way, and no results be released until the last one, which is Alaska, which will keep us all up at night. So we're going to have our little hot tea or coffee to stay up late. But that's okay. It's once every 4 years. We can handle it. So no ballot information is released until the last party is closed. So Alaska closes. And then the numbers can start coming in. But it's not fair to have the East Coast announcing things while there's still time on the West Coast, where people can go, oh, they're so far ahead, I don't need to go, it's kind of rainy right now, I'll stay home. Or, oh my gosh, my candidate seems to be losing, I better get everybody in the neighborhood up and let's keep going. That's not okay. It needs to be fair, and it needs to be at the same time. And it's not voting for a week, maybe a day. Our Constitution says a day. And so we need to define a day. I think that's important. I believe a day should be 24 hours. And And if it is done properly, we all managed to do this before when we were going to the polls and it worked. So I don't understand why we can't make it work again. If we wanted to open it earlier in the morning, if we wanted to open more precincts. Now remember, because we're doing all in one day, there wouldn't be a need for people to what they call cure the ballot, which means that what I said before about, well, you didn't do it, the circle quite right. And so now I'm going to do another ballot with circling it in for you and making sure that the ballot is clean. There wouldn't be any of those problems because they wouldn't feed through the machine until it was done correctly. You could look at it and have it recorded. There are issues where, okay, if somebody's doing really well, then, you know, all the people end up, you know, going there and trying to see if they can get more people to vote. When we had, and we still have, after in this election, between three and five, and I think it's now down to three, different elections across the country where they were so close that they sent in from both parties, rightfully so, to make sure that everything was completely done correctly and challenging different processes and such. I think that that could be alleviated if we went back to the polls. So I think that that's one of the situations too, that we'd have more clean rolls. I had a man come talk to me about taking a precinct list that he had, and he mailed it out using the USPS. Apparently they have a machine or a program that will tell you if this is a valid address. So he put them through and got back a handful, or more than a handful, of bad addresses. And he said, this is the address that the ballots are going to. And look at how many are not accurate addresses. So I introduced him down at the time to our person who was in Olympia as elections director that's now gone to Florida. And she said, well, we use a different system than that. And I believe it was called Eric. And he said, well, okay, you can use that one, but then you really should use this one because you shouldn't be sending ballots to bad addresses. And that didn't really go anywhere. So since then, I have been very concerned about the fact that our voter rolls in our state and across the country, as I said, Judicial Watch has had literally thousands and thousands of ballot names removed from lists because they don't exist. So I'm not saying that people are necessarily abusing those ballots that are floating around, but it is not optimal for having people be confident if your voter rolls are not clean and they are not transparent. It also is a huge cost. And I do believe that since we all know when a presidential election is going to be, it's not a secret, that we can plan 4 years in advance. And no, I don't think it should be a holiday so that business people have to pay for others to not work that day, that we should have it so that you go before work or whatever, and during your lunch hour or after work, whatever. And if we were to implement using the technology that we now have, that we could print it out at home, run it through the machine there, and be in and out in a very short amount of time. And if you don't have access to a computer, that you get a ballot there and go and make it out at the voting poll and do it the way that was done before. But again, we know when you leave there, your ballot is pure, it's done, it's counted, and it's ready to go. So I think that is a huge issue that we're going to have more conversation about and get data, because it is truly a waste of time. And I remember one time there was a study at the county that said it was $14 to send a letter. Not just a regular letter, when you count everything, the supplies, the overhead, the percentage of staff time, whatever. And now you've got a ballot that's got several things stuffed. So you have to have a machine sorting all these things in the jacket, the ballot, the any other papers that they want to have in there, and get it to 100% of the people when you know a much smaller amount of people are actually going to vote. It is expensive. And when people say, I paid too many taxes, we have got to be willing to step up and say, let's look at doing things differently. And while it may not seem as convenient that I'm actually going to have to get up at 6:30 on the first Tuesday of November every fourth year to go and do this, it saves us all money and integrity. And then there's this other situation that is legal in our state now and not legal in every state. And that is where after the election, you go out and go to people's houses and ask them for their ballot. And I went one year because I had never done it before and it was new to me. And I was in a van and there was a huge bus in front of us. And all these people in similar jackets got off with those big boxes and went to different addresses and were collecting ballots. And a few of us were trying to do the same thing. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is really scary because now somebody that's not family has somebody's ballot and they can look at the name, they can see the neighborhood and say, well, this is a mostly this kind of neighborhood or that kind of neighborhood. Or I think that person may have voted different than I wanted, so their ballot may or may not turn up. Now that will be better because you can track your ballot on the computer. I do not like that process. I don't think that that's the way it should be done. And as I said, not every state acknowledges that as being legal. So there are conversations that need to be held and not be like, oh, it's only about my convenience, but really what is best for the truth and for making sure that the integrity is so pure. And I told you before about being on a committee where, when there were questions on ballots, it would come to this committee. And frequently, both the Republican and the Democrat observer would look at the ballot. And if it looked like it was more like a Republican ballot, then it was usually the Democrat that would say, I think this one's yours. And so then the Republican would say, yes, I think so. And it was usually the opposite. If it looked like more like a Democrat one, then the Republican would usually say, I think that's yours. So it was such refreshing to have two people, different parties, obviously, be able to say, I acknowledge that this ballot looks like they meant to vote for your candidate. And then there were some that you couldn't tell. And so they started looking around and saying, okay, well, for this reason, I think it's more, yours or whatever, and have a discussion. But most of the time, it was fairly clear in one way or another with some crazy things that people were doing, which didn't make it any easier. But I was really impressed with that process. And I think that if people take it seriously and, vote by now, we should all know that you have to, go inside the circle. You need to use a pen and fill in the circle, and you don't need any pictures of Mickey Mouse in the corners. So it's an important experience, and I really think we need to stop being so lazy that we, don't want to get up and go to vote, or we can't find a stamp, or we can't afford the gas. I'm sure there are some people that maybe can't afford it, but they have friends who can. And I think we just really need to have a grown-up conversation rather than some of the rhetoric that has gone on. So I hope that gives you some food for thought. And somebody should get all the costs across the country and be able to look at how much each ballot costs and be able to say, is this really how much we want to spend on this? As opposed to collectively being able to build a freeway or, some park or whatever else we could be spending the money on. So I also wanted to talk about something I talked to you earlier in this conversation, and that was about when the pilgrims came to this country in 1607. That they were led by a pastor named Robert Hunt, and he arrived in Virginia Beach. And when they arrived in Virginia, the expedition decided that they were going to dedicate this country to the glory of God. They planned, pardon me, they planted a rough-hewn wooden cross, which they brought from England. to plant in this land, and then they prayed. And this is the prayer that they did. We do hereby dedicate this land and ourselves to reach the people within these shores with the gospel of Jesus Christ and to raise up godly generations after us. And with these generations, take the kingdom of God to all the earth. May this covenant of dedication remain to all generations as long as this earth remains. And may this land, along with England, be evangelists to the world. May all who see this cross remember what we have done here, and may those who come here to inhabit join us in this covenant and in the most noble work, that the Holy Scriptures may be fulfilled. So I thought that that was a pretty important part of our history that most people don't know about. And I wanted to share that with you, which is why we often talk about our country being a light on the hill. Okay, so next we've talked about truth, and we've talked about, I wanted to share another sermon from the 19th century. It was by an English minister, Charles Haddon Spurgeon, and this is what he said. Let us remember that God's truth is still the same. It does not matter whether 50,000 espouse its cause, or only five, or only one. Truth does not reign by the ballot box or by the counting of heads. It abides forever. All the tongues of men and angels cannot make truth more true, and all the howlings of devils and doubters cannot transform it into a lie. Over the years, the language of cancel culture, censorship, and bias have become ubiquitous. It seems like everybody has in the legacy media only to find a pattern of blatant censorship and discrimination when it pertains to certain viewpoints. The ABC network, during the presidential debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, after the ABC moderators fact-checked Trump, but not Harris, criticism appeared across social media. One person commented, "This is not bias, it's much worse. This is direct, planned interference in the debate outcome." Now, I watched that debate and I was pretty shocked at how the moderators were not moderate, and how the gentleman was prepared for an answer that really wasn't his role as a moderator to do. So I believe there were four fact checks on him and zero on Vice President Harris. There should have been zero for both, and that was an issue. A Republican form of government cannot function as our founding fathers intended unless we, the people, are allowed to speak freely. On CBS News, the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, was accused of something that they had selectively edited out of the most persuasive part in a recent interview that he did with them. And I thought that was very interesting. I did hear the whole speech and then how it had been edited out, and it was blatant. And that was very upsetting that CBS News did that. And by contrast, CBS News also was faced with accusations of selective editing in an interview with Vice President Harris to portray her, giving her multiple chances to answer a question that they felt she could do a better job if she had more time to answer the question. This is not okay. So again, there are many sources of getting news, and some of them are more conservative, and some of these I had never even heard of. But there's one called Stand Firm, and it's in the top 30 apps on the App Store for news. And right now, it's outranking the legacy media apps for the Washington Post, the AP News, the MNBC, CBS News, and the BBC, and more. So again, I had not heard of Stand Firm, but I will tell you that I'm going to add it to my list of different medias to be listening to. Again, I believe that you really do need to be hearing from more than one media source to get sure of what's being said is accurate. People, purportedly promoters of diversity, equity, and inclusion, are quick to silence viewpoints different from their own. They hide behind their biased terms like fact-checking to silence voices that they do not want to hear. The Correction to an ABC News moderator, Lindsay Davis's claim that there's no state in this country where it's legal to kill a baby after it's born, for instance. And then there was a fact check that there are 12 states that have no legal protections for infants who survive an abortion attempt. And another 3 states have removed their protections. After posting this correction, along with a link to the FRC.org, they partners with Facebook put a false information tag and suppressed that information. Now, whether you're pro-abortion or anti-abortion, the facts of what is happening when there is a what they call botched abortion and actually the baby does survive, that is not necessarily categorized. And so the data is not good, but it should be good because by the time a child is sustainable on its own, it is a person. And so at that point, there should be some discussion and some information on that. So the fact that they didn't do any of the information, and when the information came out, because they didn't want it to be discussed, they decided to suppress it and say it's false information. Much of that happened with COVID. And as we are seeing the false information that now they're starting to say, oh my gosh, COVID did start at Wuhan, and that our research was done here, and then the federal government decided it wasn't safe to do here. And one of the head researchers from here went to Wuhan, and in a picture that was in Wuhan of the people working on the COVID, where COVID was, that man was in the front row middle. And so maybe accidentally he got there, I don't know, but it's very odd that the researcher from here ended up there. So I think it's important that we really look at how we are labeling things and who is making rules that aren't there. And, you know, there were times when things happened when I would come to the defense of the Democrats and they would say, well, why did you do that? And I said, because it wasn't right and it wasn't fair. And in turn, many of them came to me later and said, you know, you really do want to play fair. And so we're going to do this to help you too. And the camaraderie of working together makes better bills. This is not us against them. This is making our world a better place. And so no matter what we think, there was a football player recently that said, we must always speak in charity, but never mistake charity for cowardice. And I think that's a really good quote, that we can do what we need to do with a peaceful and kind conversation, but that doesn't mean that we're cowards. We need to stand up for what we think is right for our country and live by the rules of our country and really take an active interest. I heard Dan Bongino on his radio show talking the other day about the fact that so many people are divorcing themselves of really knowing our history or how government works. And so they don't understand what's happening. And then when things happen, they aren't able to fact check on their own. So I thought that was really important, that we all need to be on a regular basis taking and looking at what's going on and educating ourselves. When I was out collecting signatures for the initiatives, I had people tell me, government does not impact me. And one of the people, I said, oh, you never flush your toilet? And he looked at me with a strange look. What do you mean by that? And I said, well, that is a government service. And so where do you think that goes? And, you know, all these different things that I asked him about government. And he said, well, I didn't know that that was all government. I thought those were just things that happened. And I said, well, yeah, they happen. But as he walked away, I thought, how can a man of his age not have processed how things happen, and that he didn't feel like he had any interest in government when it impacts them on a daily basis. So let's all become more educated in our Constitution and our founding fathers' dreams for this country, and listen to the data and be supportive of one another and be open to the idea that the majority of this country voted for the president. And now we all need to get on board. If we don't like things, we have the right to talk about it. If we want to use those things for the 2028 election, fine. But in the meantime, we need to be united and we need to work together and come up with the very best things. And this issue is always a question when a new president comes in on vetting who they want for different positions. And that's great. But being cruel and threatening them with bomb threats and their family, that is not acceptable. What they did in when they were 3 years old, I really don't care. And I think that we need to start saying we're not hiring saints. They may have done something that wasn't perfect 10, 15, 20 years ago, but let's look at their overall accomplishments, their integrity, their character, and kind of the fruits of their life. Are they doing well? Are they kind to other people? Are they educated? And if there's something that comes up that's relatively minor, let's not be judgmental to the point where we wouldn't want to be judged to that same standard. Okay, well, I hope that we will continue to get more information as we go forward on how we are going to unite our country and our state. We will be talking more because I said earlier that our state is not all in the Trump or election supporters of how it all turned out in this race. But I don't think it was a surprise. And I think a lot of Democrats have told me that they were not surprised either, and that they thought things had gone too far. And we will talk about Ms. Lee and her role inside the Democrat Party and what she thinks needs to happen. But right now, unity is the name of the game. And I think we will find that we can work together as a country and be a wonderful country. After all, this is a country that so many people want to come to. I've been to 8 different countries in the last 2 years, and soon will be in several more. And the more I see in poverty in places like Africa and other places, and things that I see in even the EU with their brownouts and blackouts, and also one of the things I'm concerned about is the amount of power that we are giving away as a country to the United Nations, to the ICC, which is the International Criminal Court, to The Hague, to finances through Brussels. I am very concerned that we must unite and be aware of these things that the United Nations and another one, the WHO, the World Health Organization. Frankly, having served on a health board, I wouldn't trust the WHO with my pet turtle. It's really unfortunate what's been happening with the WHO and the information that they hid from us. And we cannot give other governments or other organizations the power over our country. And I have been working with this lady, the group that we both belong to, her name is Pivia, and she was before the ICC, the International Criminal Court, and what she went through was horrific, and she should not have been through that at all. She has a country that she is part of, and she's a legislator there, and they have their own government. The reason for the International Court is to help with things in governments where they can't do their own checking on things and moderating when there are issues. And so I think we need to get informed, we need to get united, and we need to know that when the WHO wants to take over, when there are agreements with the United Nations to give away our power, that we need to know this and we need to stand up. Otherwise, we are going to find that the country that we love is not it's not what we want it to be. So be informed, have a great holiday season, and know that being good to your neighbor is being good to yourself and your family. Good night.
Kathy will be back next week with another new episode of Behind the Scenes, right here on Valley 104.9 Northwest Eclectic.